Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. This week, we're discussing something every trans person has to deal with, all these little things that add up in ways cis people likely don't even realize. It's death by a thousand cuts with trans microaggressions. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the lady whose aggressions are never micro, Susan Bridges.
Hello.
We have macro aggressions, I think.
Yeah, not trans related, just to be clear to the listeners. But
I mean,
when you are angry, the world knows.
So when I was younger, I was way worse.
Yeah, but that's true.
Quite the hothead.
Yeah.
So I've mellowed a bit.
A little bit.
But
I have perhaps had that effect upon you.
I've learned to be more of a human with you, I think, and not
that's good.
Range machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm more of a righteous anger sort of
person,
and that's not useful in so many situations.
No. Well,
listen, we all have our things, right? Our returning guest is April Kirby, who spent the last 15 years making sketch shows and performing improv across the state of North Carolina, in the last 2 years having a much better understanding of why she spent all that time figuring herself out on stage. When she's not performing, she's either thrifting, working on a fun new recipe, or creating resources for Autism Grown Up, a nonprofit focused on providing autonomy-centered learning tools for special educators and free independent living resources for autistic adults. You can catch her in Raleigh every second Saturday with Capital City Culture Club or all over Charlotte with Now Are the Foxes. Welcome back, April.
Hello, it's good to be back.
Okay, so I want to ask you about your improv, especially the spot where you said that you were using it to figure yourself out on stage. What was that like? What did you go through? How did that work?
You know, it was sort of an interesting thing, and it's sort of a reflection too of me thinking back from a post-transition lens of like, what about improv in particular was so appealing to me? And I feel like part of it was, I think you've talked about this before, sort of the mask you put up
when
you're just sort of trying to be someone you're not and trying to be who people are expecting you to be. The stakes for me, at least, they could feel so high, just like in regular situations, talking to people, things like that, that it was often very hard for me to navigate those things and hard for me to sort of do anything other than try and get by. Whereas improv felt like a space where I could, it was almost like a sort of a dissociation exercise that didn't feel like awful. It felt like just like in a controlled setting that felt good. I could just try and be all these different things. And I was doing it in part because, you know, I desire to like be funny and like learn the rules of comedy and be socially accepted, you know, as a strategy to be like more socially accepted, but also just that opportunity to try all these different ways of being and knowing the deal was this was just me doing that on a stage and seeing how that feels. And no one in the audience will think, oh, this is me or who I am, and feeling a certain safety in that was very liberating and continues to be, even though I feel much more in tune with who I am and don't feel like I'm like dissociating in that way anymore. I think that was what really, like, compared to like, there are a lot of other ways I could have tried to be funny, but that was the one that let me do that all the time, basically throughout the whole show, and do whatever came to mind and let that be a priority. So I think that's what led me to stick with it for so long and to find it so interesting still.
Was it strange to you, like doing improv pre-transition especially, to have so many people seeing you or watching you? Because I always struggled with, the last thing that I wanted was to be perceived by anybody, because then I had to try to, you know, put that mask back on and perform the role I didn't know how to be. And I know that, you know, you're putting on different masks and different roles with the improv, but you're still sort of, you know, in front of people and being perceived. And was that uncomfortable for you, or did it somehow free you up so that wasn't as hard?
I think maybe, you know, when you put it that way, it's interesting to think about, because I think maybe part of the product of like feeling like I was sort of dissociating a little bit into these characters was not feeling as perceived and being able to focus on like some of the other parts of improv that to me made me feel like I had more control than over other situations where okay. I was also being perceived, like
yeah,
in social situations. It made me feel very uncomfortable to be perceived because I often had trouble like navigating them and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then on stage, they're like improv's like rules are pretty loose and in quotes, but like there's sort of like a broad set of like guidelines and an internal consistency that sort of gets built up in improv that to me felt like much easier to navigate because there's almost more of a shared understanding between okay. you and your scene partner or partners that you were building this thing up together, but it was also important that we follow it. And that for whatever reason made so much more sense to me, or was so much easier for me to handle. And so maybe sort of outweighed by being the sort of drawback of being perceived was the feeling that I could sort of have some control over how I was perceived in that context, even if I knew sort of outside of that people would still see me how they saw me as just a cis man presenting person out in the world.
Yeah.
So I could still have more control over that on improv stage. And also I think part of it too is just like weirdly, just like once you, I did get like more nervous early on. If once I did it enough, it just like some of the like little bit of like nerves I'd have around it would quell a little bit too. And honestly, probably also benefit a little bit from, well, I wouldn't say benefited, but just like a little bit more of like I experienced emotions a lot less strongly before I.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think I benefited from that a little bit too. Like maybe I think I remember experiencing like aversion of nerves, but I feel like maybe it would have gotten the better for me if I were just starting out with like the full emotional suite going into the first improv show.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. We're all so different, and that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
For you, what has been the most surprising thing about transition?
You know, I think it really was, it's sort of a little bit parallel to just like the feeling of like being alive that we talked about last
yeah.
time, was that like, much like I thought I was being alive, I did like prior to transition feel like, oh, like I experience emotions. And I even remember thinking like, this was like one of those ways I'd be like sort of critical of like men broadly when I was really just more interrogating myself, but I'd be like, wow, like I don't understand how men have so much trouble controlling their emotion. I feel emotions and I barely takes any effort to control them at all. And then once I started being on the right hormones, my gosh, it was like, I was likened to feeling like I was in like one of those little like comic book baggies that preserves them. And then like I stepped out of it and I could suddenly
yeah.
like feel everything. And I was like, oh, wow. Like just the intensity with which I feel like being able to experience emotions now compared to then, that wasn't even something that was really on my radar and just like really came up and like all of a sudden it was like this big thing and continues to be like, and it's also amazing. Like it kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you ever saw the Futurama episode where Bender becomes a human for like an episode. And
I have
like,
not seen that. No.
And like one of the gags is like, he like does all this like stuff that's like painful or not a pleasant experience, but because he's experiencing it for the first time, it's like neat and interesting. And
sure.
I distinctly remember like the first time I felt like really, really sad or like really, really upset or really, really angry and being like, well, this is not a pleasant experience, but it's kind of fascinating to me right now, just like that I am having this experience. And now that I'm more used to it, you know, it's a more regular vibe. But yeah, that's just how intense the difference was, that it almost like was fascinating, even as it was also kind of like a challenge to navigate.
Yeah, you don't even realize, I think. I mean, some people maybe do, but I didn't realize how muted everything was to me pre-transition. Because like I would have told you, yeah, I have emotions, I feel things, and It was nothing, though, compared to like what it is now. So there's such a difference. It's coming out of the poly bag. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to people who are just beginning their transition, or something you wish you knew, you know, going into it ahead of time?
I think there's sort of the cliche advice that I think is worth repeating because it holds true is let yourself make mistakes. Like
Because
that's something I would hear a lot, and I'd say, well, I probably know I'm going to do it, but I'm still going to try and be like cool and that, and like, you know, navigate it. And sort of, it's more sort of when those moments come where you like perceive in yourself that you like made a mistake, whether that's looking back or feeling like it in the moment. For me, probably the most iconic examples were like my early attempts at doing makeup were very
mine were disastrous.
Yeah, they were very sloppy, and they were like not the kind where it was like I could feel nice about it at the time and then look and be like, oh, I had so much to learn. It was like, oh, I felt bad about it right away. And in those moments, like, yeah, those are the hardest times to sort of remind yourself that it's all part of the process, and that, you know, making those types of mistakes are on the way to being able to use those tools to be the image that you want to be out in the world. And then the other piece that I sort of, this one was actually one of like the earlier pieces of advice I read out of, it was just a book that had like a bunch of different sort of anecdotes from trans people just talking about their trans experience. And I apologize, I forget who exactly said it, but they basically, the core piece of advice they offered was be open to all the ways that you could change as a person, or that you don't really have an idea of who you might be as your transition goes on, and sort of being open to the idea that who you are at the beginning might be very different from who you are at the end of the process. And that really helped me sort of, as I've sort of had to come to terms with like what things I want to keep from my old life versus what things I don't want to. And sort of the way, this is another sort of paraphrasing a quote that I thought would really resonated for me, but sort of, yes, I transitioned to be a woman, but I transitioned to be myself.
Right.
And that, and like, it's not just, you know, you're like on your way to having the image you want, and then you know who you are right away, you know, figuring out who that person is after spending so long just trying to be a person for the approval of other people is its own process. And there's like a lot of layers of giving yourself permission and trying to remember and all these different things that you just never know how it will turn out, but keeping an open mind to it is just really helps it feel like an awesome journey of self-discovery, even with all the hard parts.
Yeah, I think that's really important because it is a journey, and you may think ahead of time you know what the destination is, but it could change along the way as you discover, you know, it's a journey of self-discovery. You're learning about yourself and who you really are, and you need to be open to figuring that out, even if it takes you places that you maybe didn't think it would. So, you know, it's about finding the most authentic you that you can be, wherever that, you know, may take you. So I think that's really good. Before we dive in today, you want to remind folks where they can find you online if they'd like to look you up after listening?
Oh, yes. If you want to see me post a bunch of selfies wearing different outfits, you can find me at April Kirby at chaosfem.tw. That's on Mastodon. And if you want to see me post a bunch of pictures of different baked goods and stuff, you can follow me on Instagram at Miss April Kirby.
You're constantly making me hungry, just so you know.
Oh, that's the best compliment I could have gotten.
Okay, cis folks, this episode is again largely directed at you, so please listen and try to understand. Please share this with other cis folks because you can have a greater impact on them than I can, and this is one of those things we need to change. If you're unfamiliar with the concept of microaggressions, they're small comments usually made offhand and usually without any ill intent. But due to unfamiliarity with the marginalized community they're being said to, they end up being hurtful. But Tilly, how can that be? Listen, it's confusing, right? If you're not intending to be hurtful or biased towards a marginalized community, how can it happen? Well, let me direct you to the Trans Tuesday on Implicit Queer Phobia, which was episode 57 of this show just last week. And this happens even with parts of our own identities, as you can learn about in the Trans Tuesday on Internalized Transphobia, which was episode 18. all of us by quote unquote virtue of being raised in a white, non-disabled, cisgender, heterosexual society have these biases implanted in us without our knowledge. Also see the Trans Tuesday on gendered childhoods for more examples. That was episode 50 of this show. And I'd be remiss if I did not mention that any trans person who faces more than one societal marginalization has to deal with compounding microaggressions, which makes things even harder. See the Trans Tuesday on trans intersectionality for more on that, episode 10 of this show. Okay, background info out of the way, so let's talk about some incredibly common trans microaggressions so you have an idea of what we're talking about and, if you're cis, what not to say to trans people. The most common one I personally received, especially in the early days after coming out, was, quote, "Welcome to being a woman," and it universally came from cis women, and it was in response to me talking about something I was dealing with. "My bra is uncomfortable. Welcome to being a woman. Gosh, the women's bathroom line is long. Welcome to being a woman. I experienced misogyny. Welcome to being a woman." It came as a response to anything remotely about being a woman in society. And what's so bad about that, you ask? Well, first of all, being a woman was not new for me. I've been a woman since I was born, but I had junk that made a doctor decide I had to be a man. I've said it 100 times before, if you're trans, you've always been trans, even if you weren't transitioning, even if you weren't out, even if you didn't know. Nothing can just make someone trans, just like nothing's going to make trans people suddenly cis. Yes, it's true, conversion therapy doesn't work for sexuality or gender, and it's because these are internal parts of who we are, not choices we make. We can choose to transition or not, but we don't choose to be trans. There's a link in the show notes all about it. Just because you didn't know I was a woman doesn't mean I wasn't one. I wasn't dressing as a woman, I wasn't experiencing the same discrimination as a woman, but I was absolutely experiencing discrimination trying to be a gender nonconforming boy and man. And when I say gender nonconforming there, I don't mean in clothes or presentation. I tried. I tried so hard to be the dude society said I had to be. But I never acted like a dude, I never thought like a dude. And when cis boys and men see another perceived cis boy or man not thinking or acting as they have been taught that men quote-unquote should, they will 100% punish you for it in a wide variety of ways. Cis gay men know this all too well.
And yet another way that society reinforces gender binary. Yeah.
Yeah. So getting back to microaggressions, what the particular, quote, "welcome to being a woman" was implying was, oh, this is all new for you because you just became a woman, which in a roundabout way denies the incredible struggle I went through. It ignores that I've always been a woman. It ignores the reality of my life. It implies I have appropriated womanhood that does not belong to me rather than embrace the womanhood that was always rightfully mine. If it was one person who said it, not that big of a deal. You roll your eyes and move on. But that's why microaggressions are the death of 1,000 cuts, right? One cut isn't a huge deal. But 1,000 at once? Now you've got a serious problem. So when 12 cis women level that on you in the span of a month, especially right after coming out, you feel wounded and hurt and unwelcome and like you'll never really belong or be accepted by cis women. And after a lifetime of battling the pain and misery of dysphoria, to finally be on the journey to being who you always were inside, to have that dropped on you is extra horrible. I'm well acquainted with how uncomfortable bras can sometimes be, and women's bathroom lines and misogyny. I have been a woman my whole life. Do not welcome me to the thing I've always been as if it was a choice I just made and not a lifetime of struggle. If you need more on how awful dysphoria can be, see the Trans Tuesday on it at tillystranstuesdays.com. Okay, April, did you get the welcome to being a woman comment, and did you get it 100 times?
You know, it's funny. Maybe it's a symptom of good luck or where I've been at. I've only remember getting it once.
Oh, wow. And I'm envious.
Yeah, and it was one I was like watching out for too, because I keep hearing about it. So I'm definitely familiar with that dynamic. But yeah, I've gotten very lucky with it. And that's one I think I especially was worried about, because like, I guess the thing that like, especially about that particular trope that feels so painful is the implication that like, that we didn't really think this through before we went.
Right.
I think a classic example is like I've gotten some pretty nasty like cases of like, just like the types of like harassment I might get, just like,
yeah,
just being out and about, or like particularly like people inappropriately hitting on me or making those types of comments. And like, of course, that's something I knew would happen if I transitioned, and I was scared of it happening, and I was worried about the first time it would happen and all of those things. But that doesn't make it hurt any less or mean that when it finally did happen, that I was like, oh yeah, this is okay, because I knew it was a thing that was going to come with the experience. So I feel fine about it. Great, even, right? No, it's something I still, that will still hurt, and that I might need to commiserate and support over. And then
yeah,
that response just feels like, oh, well, what did you expect by the choices that you made?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it sort of dismisses that it was a choice that I had, that to call it a choice, of course, I chose to transition at some point, but to call it a choice diminishes how necessary it was for me to be able to actually
exactly.
Live my... Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you're now getting an idea of just how bad microaggressions can be and how they add up to a big problem. Now imagine you're not just getting the welcome to being a woman microaggression, but that and a dozen more. Here are some other very common ones. Accidental misgendering. We all slip up sometimes, but when it keeps happening from multiple people, that wound goes deep. See the Trans Tuesday on Misgendering and Passing, episode 34 of this podcast. Accidental dead naming. Exactly like accidental misgendering, accidents happen and nobody's perfect. But a lot of them add up to feeling like no one sees you as the real you. See the Trans Tuesday on Names and Pronouns at tillystranstuesdays.com. You're a man now. Enjoy male privilege. Trans men have always been men, and they do not experience male privilege the same way cis men do. You're a woman now. How could you give up male privilege? Trans women have always been women and do not experience male privilege the way cis men do. Oh, it drives me bananas. Okay. How can you be a man and a woman or neither? Questions about quote unquote how our very identities can be a thing that exists, and how that's just so unfathomable to you as a cis person? Not good.
It's also, you know, not your business.
Speaking of, are you getting the surgery? Do not ask us about our genitals. What is wrong with you, you entire gas station hot dog? Do you ask cis people about their genitals?
Again, not your business.
Right. Did you get the surgery question, April? Because I do not understand cis people's fascination with trans people's genitals. It's so bizarre and frankly, very creepy.
Yeah, I've gotten a few different versions of it. Like there's like the classic, just like the surgery. And then like sometimes people will try and be like more in the know and be like, oh, are you going to like a certain place? And I'm like, what? That's, I just try it. I'm still working up the social courage to really push back against a question like that, but
yeah.
You should sort of stutter my way through an answer and just try and get out of the situation.
Yeah, I think I want to take to just starting to shout back at people, it's none of your business. Move along. Or I'll just start asking them about their genitals. See how they like it.
It's more of a goodness, and you say that right in public.
Exactly. Or... here's another one, recoiling in horror when you learn what the surgery is. Super great that life-saving medical care some trans people need grosses you out. Thanks so much. Your life is so different from normal people. Hey, cis people aren't normal. Please, please, please see the Trans Tuesday on Cis Is Not a Slur, aka There Is No Default Human, episode 30 of this show. Why make life so hard for yourself? Good Lord, tell me you have absolutely no idea how bad dysphoria is without telling me you have absolutely no idea how bad dysphoria is. Also, you know who makes existing as trans hard? Cis people. Maybe go talk to them about that. Can't you just be a lesbian or a gay man? You know what? Not all of us are gay. And do you think we would spare ourselves a life of discrimination and difficulty if we could? Also, see the Trans Tuesday on Disentangling Sexuality from Transness at tillystranstuesdays.com.
That actually, I just want to make a comment that
yes.
The complete juxtaposition of like transphobes being like, how could you do this to yourself? And then immediately flipping to, well, obviously athletes will do this to gain an advantage. Like it's nothing. And I'm just like,
yeah.
You realize these two things do not go together.
Cognitive dissonance is what it is.
So,
yes. There's no logic to it. No.
No.
And, you know, also I want to say about the can't you just be a lesbian or a gay man? The thing about that is, you know, they're not exactly treated like cishet people either. They face discrimination. not maybe as much as trans people, but their own kind.
Right. They've assigned everything along a hierarchy of acceptableness.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Where do you fall?
Exactly.
It's true. When I hear that one, it almost feels like a form of bargaining from the person. Like,
yes,
they don't approve
absolutely.
Of those gay people either. They would just be more okay with that.
Right. When did you decide you were trans? Oh, I don't know. When did you decide that you were cis? Or was that just something you intrinsically knew? If you didn't tell me you were trans, I'd never have known. What this is doing is saying, quote, you look like a cis person, and that's good and desirable. If you looked trans, I would have already known, and that would be bad for you. Don't do that. You're pretty for a trans person. Why? Because being trans makes us ugly? Come on now. Okay, this one I've seen so many people get. You don't need surgery or HRT. You're beautiful. It is not about how you think we look or need to be. It is about us and what we need to be our true selves.
It's exactly the same as that. You would look so pretty with less makeup. Why do you do that? Like,
yeah.
Just policing appearance.
Well, and it relates right into the next one. You were so pretty / handsome before transition. It is not about how you think we look or need to be. It's about us seeing ourselves in the mirror.
Like, maybe just don't comment on other people's bodies. That would, like, save so much.
In so many ways.
Like, just stop.
I'm not transphobic. I just think, repeats transphobic propaganda. This one feels pretty self-explanatory. If you're going to start with, I'm not transphobic, but just don't say it.
Might as well just stop there.
Just stop, because that's transphobia.
Just say I have reasonable concerns and I'll know what you mean and I'll just end the conversation there.
Then we know you're not worth talking to.
Yeah.
What's your real name? Our real names are what we tell you they are, regardless of what government documents may say. Asking this means you think what a government paper says is more important than our actual truth.
And again, is nothing anyone ever asks a cis person, even though I know several cis people
who don't go by their
legal name.
Yeah.
That's not unusual at all.
Not at all.
Also, none your business.
Right. What are your preferred pronouns? There is no preference for our pronouns. What are your pronouns is the way to ask. Saying they're a preference implies they're not our real pronouns. Dancing around our pronouns. Rather than using our pronouns, you contort your sentences to just never use them or overly use our name or default to they, them for everyone, which is still misgendering people who use she, her, and he, him. Just ask for our pronouns.
Although, honestly, I have done this when I've forgotten someone's pronouns and I'm like,
just ask them.
I don't remember.
Just ask.
But I feel like
such a you know, like, I forgot.
Yes.
Yes.
I was raised in a very WASPy environment, so I very much
Same.
Understand the awkwardness of asking a direct question like that. And I've had to train myself too to be like, no, it's just better to, it's better to ask. It's noticeable when, because once it's done to you, it's like very noticeable when a person does that.
Exactly.
That's a fair point, because like my Midwestern upbringing, don't talk about a lot of.
Yeah. And let me tell you, that if somebody wasn't sure of my pronouns and they asked me, I would be glad that they wanted to get it right.
Yeah.
I would not be upset about that. I can't speak for every trans person, but I think generally we're much happier if you just ask so that you will get it right.
But I've definitely had those experiences.
Where yeah.
Like, it's worse to call out that you did something bad versus the bad thing.
That's very Midwestern.
Very Midwestern. Yeah.
I hate my body too, but I don't need surgery. Body dysmorphia or a poor body image are big issues in our society, but they are not comparable to being trans. Equating the two minimizes the pain of dysphoria. I can't imagine wanting to change my body in such drastic ways. This others us or implies surgeries we need are elective. Also, please see the Trans Tuesday on Cis People Get Gender-Affirming Healthcare Too. That's episode 22 of this show.
Although I guess it's tempting to snap back. Guess I'm more imaginative.
I hate my photos too. Not liking your photos is not the same thing as the pain they can cause trans people, and equating the two minimizes the pain of dysphoria. See the Trans Tuesday on Photos and Reflections, also at tillystranstuesdays.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we've talked about this one on this show before. This is ignoring every single non-binary person by default. Humans are more than just ladies and men. And when you open anything with this, you are instantly making non-binary folks feel unwelcome. use friends or fellow humans or foolish mortals. This is for all female-identifying or male-identifying folks. This one feels like it's not so bad, right? The intent is clearly to make trans people feel like they are included. But what it's implying is that trans people self-identify as their gender, not are their gender. Because you don't just call cis women female-identifying, do you? This one is easy to fix, though, because did you know trans isn't a bad word? You can just say this event is for cis men and trans men, or trans and cis women welcome. Then you're conveying the exact same information, but not implying that our genders aren't real or are somehow less than the gender of our cis counterparts.
I mean, I definitely still flinch at female all the time.
Well, it's
just icky.
Yeah.
What? And it's, it sounds Ferengi.
It does. This is not an all-inclusive list. There are many, many more ways microaggressions can happen. And again, almost all are unintentional. They usually come from a place of ignorance about what trans people go through, rather than a place of maliciousness. So April, are there other microaggressions you've gotten that I've missed? Or have you gotten a lot of the ones that I did list 14,000 times and you want to scream?
Oh, you know, there's one in particular from your list that stands out to me, but I'll start with one that I often get down here in the South, and that is in the use of gendered honorifics.
Mm-hmm.
And
ma'am and sir. And
yep.
Yeah,
that happens a lot, I'm sure.
And part of the reason it's such a tough one to deal with is because there are people who are just used to using the honorifics and aren't necessarily intending anything. But there are also people who will, you know, if they're serving you, like you're in a position where you're a customer and they're an employee or something, and they want to sort of communicate to you that they don't respect you, but also want plausible deniability if you say anything, they will just call you, for me, they would call me sir and like put some stink on it and just sort of like do it more than, you know, than like even down here in the South than a regular conversation might entail. So when people do it inadvertently, then it's especially like that can be especially stinging sometimes. The one that really stood out to me, it was the first one you said, and it was one that I thought, especially starting out, I mean, we kind of talked about like all the things that become more bothersome over time, but I never thought in a million years that I always thought I would just be able to like live with getting the wrong pronouns and just move on and try to ignore it. The longer and longer I go into transition and the more I get gendered correctly by strangers, it becomes more and more painful to have people who've known me and know I've been out for a couple of years continue to do the misgender me reasonably frequent pace. That's, I think, one of those things where it just like really becomes apparent, like, oh, you really see like trans and then like, you know, my assigned gender at birth before you see all the parts of me that I am now.
Yeah,
is really how it feels the longer it persists and the more, and the more it happens with just people who've known me for a long time and seen my journey and really can't seem to get the old image of me out of their head, even though they should know of all people how meaningful that is to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like I've said before, it's understandable, especially at the beginning, that people might slip up. I accidentally misgendered myself in my head for months early in transition.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Like, if it's been a long time, if you are years into transition and a friend is still misgendering you, they are not putting in the work that you deserve. Like, that's not how a friend treats somebody, right? You know, it's they wouldn't do that. Like, for a woman who got married and took her husband's last name, they're not still, you know, gonna be using the old last name. It's you have to. Cis folks, you have to put in the effort for it so that we know that you care about us and see us as who we really are. So it's really, it gets really painful. You get to the point where you're like, what do I have to do? I'm doing everything I can to make you see me as who I am, and you're still not doing it.
It's true. I've like literally sometimes doing like shows and things, I'll be like, well, this will be the outfit that really makes everyone like, where there's just no question. And because like part of it is like, you know, of course you want your friends to sort of make that effort on your behalf. But also like there's the part that's like, well, you know, there is something else I can do. And that's like a hard thing to process sometimes, for sure.
Yeah. And just as a quick reminder to folks out there that, you know, getting misgendered, it's about the person doing it, not you. It's their issue. It's not yours. It's not about your presentation or anything you're doing wrong. It's about their perception of you. Please see that episode that we did on misgendering and passing. We talk a lot more about that in there.
Well, just to your point too about like sometimes like it's tougher, it feels like it's drawing attention to it to correct yourself. That's often
the
thing that really helps me when I see my friends do that, because that communicates to me that even if they are making mistakes right now, that they see it as important and they're willing to take extra steps to make sure that they get themselves there for me, you know?
Yeah.
So even though it feels like bad, you know, the mistake already happened and I definitely noticed it, whether I said anything about it or not, you know, not necessarily being like, oh no, I'm so sorry, but showing like, no, I'm just correcting this and that I'm doing a thing that's, you know, that's a priority for me, is to correct myself if I make that mistake. It really means a lot. It's not something everyone necessarily does. So
yeah, absolutely. What were you going to say, Susan?
I was going to say pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like cis people need to just realize that if you misgender someone, they notice.
We always notice.
It's not going to just slip by.
No.
So you might as well apologize, because everyone noticed. So I'm just going to tell you that right now.
So imagine what getting a dozen of these a day would do to you. Now imagine getting a dozen of these a day every day, because for a lot of us, we're the only trans person that many cis people know. See the Trans Tuesday on that too in episode 51 of this podcast. And then imagine on top of that, all the other microaggressions someone might face for other marginalizations that they experience. The cumulative effect can hurt, destroy mental health, and make life miserable. Hopefully, from the examples I provided, you will be able to spot other things you might say without thinking that could harm someone. And listen, you don't need to walk on eggshells around us or anything. I'm just asking you to please think before you say something that might be horribly damaging to whoever you're talking to. And if you slip up, it happens to all of us, we're human. Don't underestimate how healing a genuine apology can be. Thanks for being here, April.
Thank you. It was great to be here again.
None of us are perfect, but we've all got to do the work to do as little harm to each other as possible. We're all trying to get through this life together, and we're all we've got. Please always begin with compassion. Tilly Bridges and Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The Google Doc and social media versions of this week's topic and all past topics are available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky, Twitter, and Hive, on Mastodon at tillybridges@mastodon.social, at facebook.com/tillysbridges, and on Insta and Threads at Heck Yeah Tilly Bridges. And you can find Susan on most of those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at Audio Jillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of tillystranstuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies, where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening. Our returning guest this week is April Kirby, who spent the last 15 years making sketch shows and performing it. I'm going to take that again. I'm sorry, Jillian. I messed that up. Poor Jillian. I put her through so much.